Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Of course, big conversations that we're having tonight that specifically speak to the leadership changes that we've seen in the financial services space. If you are anything like I am, a geek at heart. Yeah, maybe a cool one. The news flow this morning would have gotten you incredibly intrigued by the shifts that are happening within the banking space. Kenny Fihla, Deputy CEO of Standard Bank Group and CEO of Standard Bank South Africa, an appointment that was made towards the end of last year, if I'm not mistaken, has resigned to take on the role of being the CEO of Absa Group. So yes, moving from blue to red. But there's a lot of context that we need to make sense of here. Not only the leadership dearth that we've witnessed at Absa, which is essentially taken place from August last year, after the CEO, Ari Rotenbach, was asked to resign with, took retirement, early retirement at the time, due to some controversies around a few leadership appointments that he had made. And if you think back to some of the appointments before that, Daniel Minnelli, after Maria Ramos, there's been a lot of concern about the lack of internal support in terms of succession planning that has taken place at Absa. But one person who knows more about this than I do, just in terms of the complexities, as we use this as a case study, as we're not necessarily going into much of the detail internally, as we know there's certain shifts taking place and some regulatory approvals, but using this as a case study for us to really understand, how do CEOs get recruited? What's required in the top job? And most importantly, what about cooling off periods and gardening leave? Is that such a thing? Otherwise, I'd like to throw my name into the hat, but it's a lot of responsibility. 4 minutes after 7 o'clock, we're in conversation with Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director of MROP Woodburn Man. Such a pleasure to have you in studio, sir.
It's so good to be here, Gugu. As you can tell, I'm dressed for radio this evening. Normally, Gugu gets me in the suit and so on, but tonight a little bit more casual.
That's okay. I'm in flats as well, just from the bottom down and casual. But what a story. As I mentioned this to you, and of course, just describing my excitement, as you can tell, I sat for a moment and I thought, hold on, what's happening here? And spoke to a few friends and colleagues just to get their perspective, and really sounds like an interesting shift that's taken place between the banking institutions.
Well, as you will know, in South Africa, it used to be known as the Big Four, right? Yes. The Big Four banks. I've sort of added Capitec, added Investec, and then you've got a couple of other challengers on their way up, right? So, in fact, one of the patterns we've always had in our financial service environment is sort of, with no disrespect, a change of the deck chairs around the top of the boat,
yes.
Right? Because you asked me, well, how do the CEOs get appointed? And certainly for this industry, it's big. It has a lot of regulatory requirements to it. Yeah. And in fact, the irony of it is, of course, Daniel, who now chairs Nedbank,
right,
used to look at the list
Manelli,
of those that all the banks would submit before they were able to hire them to significant fiduciary roles, right?
The Prudential Authority.
So Daniel had his little black book with him and, of course, knew them all. And probably becoming chair of Nedbank had an inside track for the movement of Quinn from Absa to Nedbank.
Yes,
right?
Got you.
But what you're starting to see really is one of the key elements in banking, and that is primarily you need to understand the sector. You know, whilst Gugu might say, pick me, the problem is Gugu's brilliant in front of the microphone, but might not be so good within the regulatory framework of what you've got to do from a compliance perspective. And that's only one small piece of the puzzle, right? You've got to understand, are you an investment banker? Are you a retail banker? Or do you understand all the fiduciary requirements and so on and so on? And then on top of that, what is the strategy for the institution? Some are growth, some are defense. You know, I always say, if you look at RMB, they've led on technology, they've led on people, I think, for many years. And therefore, it's hard to see that Mary now is going to have an aggressive growth in agenda because she's at the top of the game, right? Mm. So she's got to maintain or defend probably, and with some innovation on the side, which First Rand have always been good at, would achieve growth there. Absa, on the other hand, is a different set of criteria. So first, are you a banker? Because you've got to understand how to pull the levers and stay 100%. In the lines. Second, are you the right person for the strategy of the institution? And Absa will have a different strategy for First Rand and, for example, Capitec or Investec, right, as examples.
Got you.
Hypothetically. And so what ends up happening is, in fact, you've got a very tiny pool of individuals who start ticking all of these boxes. And then you've got to get them at the right time and the right place. And then they've got to meet your financial requirements. Can you afford them? Because you've got to buy them out, obviously, of where 100%. They are. Because Sim's no fool. And he would have had a nice set of retention criteria in place. Okay. And then last but not least, is the personality correct? How are they a growth person? Are they a turnaround person? Are they a fixer person? Are they a consolidator person? And oh, by the way, shall we just add Africa onto that too?
This is where you get me excited, right? Because when you look at Kenny Fihla's CV, it speaks to all of that. CIB history, of course, spending more than 18 years within the bank. At one point, looked after more than 20 regions across the African continent. And looking at his recent appointment, was certainly next in line to potentially take over Sim Tshabalala. So in your view, a win for Absa?
I would think so, but it's not out the gate and it's not a done deal in terms of success,
yes.
Right? And we've seen Absa struggle with the integration of external talent into their framework, right?
Tell us more about
that. And that is the real cultural challenge of issues that they've been grappling with, and we haven't seen Absa really, after the couple of ladies, Wendy and Maria, together, who seemed to partner well, right? After that, we've had a number of, let's call it, setbacks with either acting or short-term individuals who haven't managed to, let's say, get what they wanted done. Because 1 or 2 years in this game isn't really, a summer. It's still testing the waters, so to speak. So Absa's challenge now, and I would put this to the board and Cello, who I know, is how do you assist him to be successful, to transition, to integrate? How do you blend together the Absa that they know well and the new man coming from outside and allow him to keep the ball or the wheel spinning, but then add his own flavor over time? These things are not a 1 or 2 year dance, right? It's got to go longer than that.
100%. Speaking of a 1 or 2 year dance, age certainly comes into play, right? And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Fihla is about, 54, if I'm not mistaken? I did have his name. 54 years of age. So, and typically, banks expect CEOs to retire between 60 and 65, right? Talk to us about that sensitivity, if it is a factor.
I would say that our country has seen the net age of CEOs reducing, primarily because there was a call for transformation executives and they were coming up the ranks. So we had a number of good, and look at Sim when he was appointed and so on, right?
Yeah.
And so that has been the pattern. But I would pose the hypothesis that we have been either in a decade of recession, look at the Zuma years, and then I'm not sure that Cyril has turned the recessive environment to a growth environment as yet. And so what that's meant, in fact, is that experience is beginning to count for a ton. Can you actually navigate headwinds? Do you understand which levers to pull, how to be more mature in your leadership, how to manage the personalities and strategies of the day in order to deliver what I would like to say is medium to long-term success?
Got you.
Short-term if you're in a turnaround, but medium to long-term success either in stabilization or growth. And my assessment is, in fact, it's the more experienced individuals. So what we're starting to see in the market right now, white or black, male or female, is we're starting to see the appointment, in fact, of slightly more mature talent that is probably deeper, more thoughtful, not to say young people aren't, but they tend to be a bit more reactive to the issue of the day. And these individuals are happy to go a bit longer because often they are financially secure already. I'm thinking of sort of Chartered, Tiger. I'm thinking I'm Sean Summers at Pick and Pay.
Empty
and we can keep going.
Well, right?
Okay?
Yeah, we can.
100%. So this is not a new phenomenon, but it's definitely something that's happened in the last 5 years where I see our economy and boards understanding their shareholders are looking for returns. And you've got to go with somebody that you probably can trust and rely on over a medium-term choice, not a quick win. And I even look at Phil Roux turning around Nampak.
Yes.
Right? Phil Roux is not a 45-year-old. Phil's seen it. He knows it. He's well-known for being able to do the hard knocks and the heavy lifting. And so I'm looking at boards and shareholders taking a more conservative, reliable set of decisions, because actually it's everybody's money on the table.
Yeah. Skin in the game is clearly what we're looking for, someone who has that level of experience. This obviously brings about an interesting question around adequate succession planning, especially within the financial services space, because as you've mentioned, not only is it a competitive environment within the institution itself, retail banking perhaps versus CIB, having the right level of expertise all round in terms of the bank, understanding the regulatory environment, and then also understanding the strategic direction and objective of the institution at the time when one does take over. So succession planning, are we getting it right? Or is that also something we need to be mindful of?
That is such a great question, and it's a double-edged sword, right? Or two sides of the same coin. I would say to you, Standard Bank in a bit right, except they've just been knocked back a peg,
yeah,
right?
That's true. I mean,
and if we look at the Standard Bank story, it's funny how history repeats itself. Jaco Maria,
yes,
who looked at his own succession, had what I used to call the princes in waiting, and I'll give you the names.
Sure.
Richard Gush, who went on to drive Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Peter Schliebusch, Peter Wharton Hood, who's sitting at Life Healthcare,
yes,
Group CEO, but left Standard to go to Deutsche Bank, right? Nayadu was there, and one or two others. Rob Katz was there. And ironically, Standard Bank's had actually a very good track record of great breadth and depth.
Mm.
Problem is, there's only one winner out of all the princes. And so these princes are either prepared to step forward, but they also have to look after themselves. And at your mid-50s, if you think you're not going to make it, or a better offer comes along and you've got that last two opportunities, you've got to back yourself at some point. And so they can move the deck chair, so to speak.
Does deputizing always work? Because just speaking about Sim's example, I remember we mentioned this with Ben Kruger a few years ago, where he was a deputy CEO with him. And that actually then worked into Sim's favor in terms of going the long haul. Looking now at Kenny Fihla, he was the acting deputy CEO of Standard Bank Group. So that tells us where that was leading to in terms of that alignment. So deputizing does
work. I'm not a big fan. Ben and Sim were actually co-CEOs, which actually is not something that I believe is hugely successful.
Cecil
although
had something similar
in the Standard Bank
mistaken.
Environment, they did get it right. And that was because Ben had a defined period of time. And so Sim knew it's me, and Ben was going to serve a role for a period of time. And then it came over to Sim, and Sim's continued to be successful. The other guys that have got it right, of course, is Mary after Alan Pullinger at First Rand.
Mm-hmm.
So again, well planned, well thought through, probably well discussed and well executed. But others certainly have been battling. And I would say that Absa hasn't been a prime example of deep succession thinking. And when they got into this pattern, and sometimes government struggles from the same issue, acting leadership is never fully invested or empowered. They might do the best they can, but I don't think it's a good tool, maybe only in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
So far, so good. I think you're seeing some financial institutions that truly have got it sorted, and others might be surfing the wave of opportunity. And if you look at Daniel and now Quinn at Nedbank, you know, both the chairman and the new CEO have come from outside.
So exactly.
We can have a look at who's getting it right and who is more hiring what they need when they need it.
And maybe as you, you know, edify that particular answer, I'm keen to understand, does getting an outsider always work? Because sometimes, as we've mentioned, succession planning works well when you can cook and, you know, prepare the leader from within.
Yeah.
But as you said, Kenny coming in clearly from far left, looking at Jason when he made his way to Nedbank as well, coming from Absa. So it almost seems as though it's, whoa, there's a new
so
room.
So remember, we talked about why are they hired, right? And we talked about all those things they have to have. And then we talked about the strategy the organization is following. And are they a match? And then the current culture. And also you look at the individual. How big an operation have they left? Have they led? Both financially and leadership and people. And the complexity of where they've been. You know, are they ready to step forward? And then there is a bit of magic in personality and culture match, or the ability to integrate, the support they're going to get from the board, and so on. But that's the jury's off, to 24 months.
Ooh.
Longer than the magic 100 days that everybody talks about, right? 100 days is just getting your feet under the table and learning where to go and get coffee, you know?
Exactly.
And I'm making light of it. The first 100 days are important. But really, what do the results look like after 1 and 2 years? And therefore, I always say the CEO that arrives, in fact, the first year is not representative of what they're providing. In fact, you're surfing the previous incumbent's contributions mostly.
Exactly.
First year is that. Second year, you begin to see some results from your first year inputs. And only by year 3 at this level are you truly beginning to understand what to do and what the results are of your actions?
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, there's too many external inputs and other things going on.
100%.
Which is why I say a good CEO will go 5 to 7 years. And at that point, you'll be truly the master of what's going on. Because you can't hide after 5 years. What you're seeing is what you sowed five plus years before.
So Mike Brown would be a good example in terms of his exit that took place just last year or the year before.
Last year he retired.
Yeah.
And I think that Daniel probably as chair led a very interesting process to find the replacement. And as I said, the thing about Daniel is he probably had his little black book from his previous life in the Reserve Bank, where he knew all of the key bankers, right? And had a view of what would fit best, who was available and where they'd come. And then, of course, Daniel had the opportunity to work with the ABSA executives, which Jason Quinn would have been one, right? And therefore, Daniel would have had both a view of what the rest of the market looked like and then the real daily engagement with Jason Quinn at ABSA.
Yeah.
And therefore would have had a very good view on how to minimize the risk. So there's a good chairman at work who just happens to come with a little black book. Not all blessed to that degree,
with
right?
With that wealth of experience.
100%.
Twofold question, because this obviously takes us to the question of incestuous. Does a black book always work in your favor, or is it regarded as just, you know, incestuous within the banking realm?
Well, so there is a bit of that, but, you know, I know Nedbank used an independent advisor like my firm is. Why? Because I competed for it. Missed it by one. So they did have the independent advice that they needed. And I think if you put that together with Daniel's knowledge, but remember, the NomCo still has to make the selection, right?
Yes.
And if
nomination committee,
yeah, the nominations committee, who didn't know, they would be really in charge of interviewing competitors.
Mm.
And it wouldn't surprise me, because I know some of the Nedcorians, right, that they do have highly competent people in the Green Bank.
Gotcha.
So it should have been Daniel and the NomCo looking at both the people Daniel knew, the people or individuals from outside that the service provider would have brought, and the best of their internals.
Gotcha.
They know the strategy, they know the culture, they know the objectives. And matching the best candidate against the institutional's needs would have resulted in their selection. And the same should have happened at ABSA.
Yeah.
And Cello's no newcomer to appointing CEOs.
Exactly.
I mean, Cello journeyed through the Forbes era with Edward Kisvetter, Mr. SARS himself in the early days and so on. So Cello is a very seasoned chair. And then with his nominations committee would have had to solve this problem as effectively as possible.
100%.
But the magic still has to happen, right?
It still has to. Cello Moloko, the chairman of ABSA, for those of you who aren't familiar. I'm loving this conversation, Andrew, and I don't want to let you go. But the one criticism that we as the public, customers, investors, shareholders, always, raise eyebrows at is the salaries of CEOs.
So remember, I say two things. One, it is big numbers.
Mm.
But, triple underline, they're hugely responsible for even bigger numbers on the balance sheet, on the profit line, on the return to shareholders, on the number of people they lead. So the stress and the accountability and the responsibility is at stratospheric level.
Mm.
And therefore, one must remunerate them appropriately for the position they hold. And of course, as you've seen with other CEOs, if they put a foot over the line and get it wrong, they might never work again in their lives.
Exactly.
So you've got a very delicate balance to run. But I always believe that the shareholder would rather that they pay their CEO well, they get the best of that CEO, they win, you and I as customers and potential investors win, and the individual wins too. Alternatively, we have to balance out what we pay good CEOs against what they could earn in other markets. So the last thing we want is these kind of caliber individuals to say, well, I'm going to London and I can earn pounds in the city and therefore that's my opportunity cost. And we have to understand that actually it's not always the Gini coefficient, the difference between a CEO's salary and the coffee maker.
Yeah.
But it's where the CEO can be remunerated elsewhere that then gives them a real value in a global marketplace. And, you know, that is our top guys like Shamil at Vodacom. Shamil Jusub, CEO of Vodacom, right, is a global telecoms executive and therefore needs to be remunerated appropriately for the role that he plays. Exactly. And by the way, he doesn't only play a South African role, he plays a Pan-African role, and now he plays a global role on the Vodafone Exco. So you've got to look at that number and understand that it's not just what does the CEO at Vodacom earn versus what does the lowliest security guard or tea maker earn, and that's unfair because it's so different. He has to be as good or better than any global executive or leader anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And that's why he commands the numbers he commands. And I just use him as an example because I think he's been long running and has certainly delivered great value to that firm, right?
Standard Bank as well. I saw some commentary around the 89 million rand that he earned in this last financial year. So as you say, it comes with a great level of responsibility and many sacrifices. And maybe that's a conversation we also need to talk about another day, just in terms of the
exec rem and the why so big and how so big.
And key man insurance, right?
Yeah.
There's some interesting scenarios where the lives of these individuals do need to be protected and prioritized, because there's a strategy in his mind that needs to be rolled out and has, as you've mentioned, so many ripple effects.
And of course, as you know, there's another key element of economics which we'll hold for another day, which is supply and demand.
Yes.
And I know that ABSA had wanted a candidate of color to really lead the charge and transformation of their bank, right? And so there are not that many that meet all of these criteria, right? In which case, if supply is constrained and there's demand, guess what happens to the price?
Yeah.
It goes up.
Exactly.
And they would want to keep him too. And we know that our transformation journey in our country will want to be successful.
Yeah.
So I wish him all the best. We'll be watching. And one hopes that he stays the distance.
Yes.
And I think for all of us, we want ABSA to be highly competitive for all of us as customers.
Yes.
In which case, we wish him, all the best, and we want him to show his changes and do his thing.
Yeah.
And we all want to see that that's a successful journey.
100%. Still a great legacy that he's left at Standard Bank nonetheless. So just to share that and I guess evolve as he heads to ABSA will really be interesting to see. And Jason Quinn, as we know, just recently published his most recent results as CEO of Nedbank. It is so interesting. Blue, green, red.
And the Capitex are coming, Investec coming, and the digital banks are coming, right?
Great,
and whilst they're still little, I mean, I didn't forget, but Discovery, is plying their own trade. You've got Time Digital, 100%. So you've got modern banking and their leadership, which is actually quite different. You're not thinking about the main high street branch, right? You're thinking about the phone.
And innovation, and you're right, speaks to a different strategy. You're not looking to just remain competitive and maintain market share. You're looking at new Andrew, I get it.
Oh. It's a very good time to be an observer of this particular sector, And I think that we are seeing, just to leave it to you, and it's another topic for another day, we are seeing a transition of key leaders, whether it's banking we've just talked about tonight, cellular, mining, Neil Froneman stepping down, FMCG with Chart, retail with Sean Summers.
Yes.
So in fact, I would say we're in an interesting wave, just hypothetically, of the post-COVID transition, where many of these CEOs were probably thinking of exiting around, let's call it the turn of the decade, 2020, but they stayed on because I think the board said, holy moly, none of us understand how to deal with
stabilize.
Will you stay? And they extended 2020 to, let's say, 23 odd. And then they had these discussions with their boards. Look, I think I'm not going to stay forever. Get ready and so on. And then you started to see it happening 2024 and first quarter
Old
2025.
Mutual. Ralph Mupita extending his contract at MTN, but
100%.
Old Mutual seeing the CEO still.
So I think you're going to see some significant CEO and then with that CFO transitions carry on in the next 9 months plus minus of this year. That's what I would predict going forward.
Sure. But this is why I love talking to you. I always walk away having learned so much more. So thank you for contributing to the knowledge of our audience and helping us think about executive remuneration, but also appointments so much more differently.
It's always my pleasure. Definitely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director of AMROP Woodburn Mann. Phenomenal job that he does in terms of making sure that the critical appointments in leadership take place in South Africa. Thank you again, Andrew. Much appreciated. It's 26 minutes after 7 o'clock. Oh, man. Share your thoughts with me regarding this conversation. 0636880959. It's been interesting. We've just been throwing out these names of CEOs, right? And the colors of their organizations and the leadership shifts that we've seen. But this is why we take you on a to not only understand the individuals at the helm of these institutions, but also the numbers that will be shared. So stay with us in a moment. We're going to speak to Rivan Rupnarain, who is from PwC South Africa. He's partner there for banking and capital markets. And as you guessed it, he might not just talk about the personalities, but more so just a quick overview of the company results we've seen and looking at the sector at large, especially when it comes to the key metrics that we use to measure the performance of banks and institutions in South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.